I did connect.
We're live.
Today is April 11th, 2017. This is Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on Human Services. This is the public hearing, the continuation of the public hearing on Senate Bill 5526, the Department of Human Services. Today is an agency wrap-up. Exciting for everyone. A culmination of two fun weeks. Four. You know, I have so much fun in this committee. I don't know about everybody here, but these weeks just go by. So we have the wrap up with the CFO, Ms. Brickman,
the conversation.
And Director Psyche. I am. But before we get started, Ms. Byerly.
And Mr. Co-Chair, members of the subcommittee, the first little piece on the agenda will be the Chief Financial Office and Ms. Brickman to come give you an update or give you kind of recap the governor's budget for you. But I wanted to let you know, Mr. Psyche will not be here. Did one of you want to explain real quickly, or you want me to try? Maybe Deputy Director could come in.
So about 3 a.m.
You have to
introduce yourself. Sorry to put you on the spot.
No worries.
I didn't want to answer the question before we got started.
Good morning. I'm Dr. Reginald Richardson. I'm the Deputy Director for the Oregon Department of Human Services. I'm here for Director Psyche, who had a medical emergency this morning. He had appendicitis, and so it was removed about 3 a.m. He has already texted and checked in on us. He's doing fine. He still has his sense of humor. At least some of us think it was funny. Others of us did not think it was funny. But we asked him what the recovery time was, and he said 6 months to a year. So, I personally did not, on the record, think it was funny. But he's doing okay. And so I'll be in his stead today. So thank you.
Okay. Excellent.
Anything else? We're sending our prayers for a quick and complete recovery in way under 6 months to Director Psyche.
But in long enough time to get better because...
Oh, yeah. No, exactly. No rushing back to work, Director Psyche.
I'm sure he's watching live.
Yeah. He took precedent from me.
Ms. Byerly, anything else before
we
get moving?
There's just two presentations of the system. The first one is the CFO presentation, and there's also one from the agency for today.
And do we have to hear from Ms. Brickman?
No.
I had assumed all along that you would be very disappointed, Mr. Kocher, if you did not hear from her.
I have been waiting 4 long weeks to hear from Ms. Brickman. Please.
Co-Chair Rayfield, Co-Chair Snyder, members of the committee, for the record, Tamara Brickman, the DHS analyst from the Chief Financial Office at DAS, and I'm here to just provide a hopefully very brief overview of the governor's budget for the agency, and so wanted to kind of provide a little bit of background on what the focus was when making recommendations and working with the governor through the budget. The budget is very child-focused, and so the priority for the governor was to hold child welfare as harmless as we possibly could with respect to budget cuts. Secondary was preserving existing eligibility for self-sufficiency programs and also for Medicaid-related programs within the adults and people with disabilities and the individuals with intellectual or developmental disability program. And then to maintain as much core services up for those Medicaid-related programs. And just as a quick comparison, the 2017-19 governor's budget is a 14.7% general fund, 6.1% total fund increase from the 2015-17 legislatively approved budget. It is, however, a 3.1% general fund or 0.5% total funds decrease from the current service level. So just emerging issues, I'm sure you are all very aware of the emerging issues within the agency given the amount of time we've spent in the committee this week, are child welfare related issues and program design, especially implementation of the Unified Child and Youth Safety Plan, which is a redesign for child and youth safety systems. And then also just quite frankly, even though it's been around for a while, the K-Plan continues to be an emerging issue in that it continues to have an effect on caseload and cost per case within the adults and people with disabilities in the intellectual and developmental disability programs. just a slide to show you kind of a quick history, and I don't know if you can see, because I certainly can't see. I forgot my glasses. Going back to the actual, so the 2011-13 is the first column, and all the way through the... Yes.
Would you like to have some glasses?
I'll muddle through. I do best muddling anyway. So, and I'll look at the screen here. Thank you, though. That was very kind of you. You can see there's been substantial growth from 2011-13, and that was the biennium in which we started to implement the K plan. And through current service level, which was $2 billion, and then the governor's budget goes down to I'm looking at those are the positions, and so that's the one thing, the line across the top of the number of positions within the agency, and then the breakdown of the different fund types. And so you can see that the general fund has grown substantially over the years, within the governor's budget it's just a slight percentage below current service level. And just as a kind of a little bit of an aside with respect to that growth, the largest percentage of growth is related to caseload and cost per case growth in APD and IDD. Those are the two programs that you're seeing the largest growth in, from LAB, from the 2015-17 LAB to the 2017-19 CSL. Key cost drivers within the department include, of course, the Adults and People with Disabilities Program and the Intellectual and Developmental Disabilities Program. Mainly, again, as I said, increases in caseload and cost per case. And when we talk about cost per case, we're kind of also talking about the acuity level of those individuals receiving services. So it's the cost per case increases depending upon the mix of services that are being provided to the individuals. In child welfare, a key cost driver is behavioral rehabilitative services, attorney general costs with respect to representation for the department, and then also the need to recruit more foster parents. So that is a cost driver that you'll see reflected in the governor's budget. And then within self-sufficiency, while the economy is improving and we are seeing caseloads decrease within this TANF programs, you're not really seeing the level of poverty going down, and so there is still some continued eligibility and folks continuing on with self-sufficiency programs, but the caseload is going down. In terms of showing you in the terms of budget categories and how the agency spends its money, you can see that 82% of its money is its special payments, which is basically money that goes out the door to providers, to clients, et cetera. Debt service accounts for about $9.2 million, which is 0%, a small percentage of the budget. Personal services is 13%. Services and supplies is 5%. And we have a very small amount of capital outlay as well. Oops. I told you. Okay. This slide shows you just the expenditures by program area. And the first slide on the left-hand side, if I get my left and my right, no, I don't get them mixed up, shows you in total funds how much each program is costing the agency. And you can see that the largest program in terms of total funds is the Aging and People with Disabilities Program, and then the second largest being self-sufficiency. And then, of course, IDD is 24%. Child welfare accounts for about 10% of the agency's expenditures, and voc rehab 1%. And then if you look in terms of, on the right-hand side, the pie there, it's just the general funds. And you can see that the general funds shift a little bit with respect to the percentage of how much it supports the program. And so within aging and people with disabilities, it's about 31% of that program. In intellectual and developmental disabilities program, it's 28%. Child welfare, 17% of the program is funded with general fund. And then self-sufficiency, although it's one of the larger programs in the agency, is funded with 14% of general fund. And then you have a small percentage for basically the administration, and then, of course, 1% in vocational rehabilitation. So just to kind of refresh your memory, and I'm sure that you're all keenly aware of the recommendations in the governor's budget, just wanted to refresh your memory about some of the cost-saving measures that are included within the governor's budget. The budget eliminates most service and supplies inflation that are granted at the current service level. So when agencies build their budget, they're given a certain percentage they can inflate their services and supplies by. This year, I believe it was 3.7%. in services and supplies, and so this budget recommends stripping that 3.7% inflationary rate out of most services and supplies. Where they weren't touched were where there are mandatory payments that they have to pay, such as the state government service charge. Didn't touch attorney general fees because that's a issue where the agency needs money. Telecommunications, and then also their computing or their data charges I didn't reduce any of that, or we didn't reduce any of that. The other thing is that there are several flat-funded federal grants that in some circumstances we will take general fund and backfill the flat funding of those federal grants to keep the program whole and moving forward at the same levels as before. This budget does not backfill those flat-funded federal grants in any of the programs. As you're aware, the program reduces the Oregon Project Independence Program to the maintenance of effort level that we are required to have by the Older Americans Act. It recommends expending the Fairview Housing Trust Fund on IDD-related programs. It eliminates the Adult and People with Disabilities 24-hour live-in program and moves those folks to an hourly support program, so there will no longer be a 24-hour live-in, largely because the costs are extraordinary given overtime and other issues surrounding the regulations that came out of the USDOL a couple years ago. And then basically the budget holds most provider rates in APD and IDD at their current rates for the most part. New investments within the governor's budget. Pardon? Yes.
Oh, Representative Buehler.
If you could just go back to the last slide.
Sure. If I can figure out how to do that. There we go.
So the cutbacks in Project Independence, my understanding, and maybe I'm wrong, is that that actually saves us money from keeping people out of long-term care, which is more expensive. Why would we cut back on that?
There are really two ways to impact the budget for DHS, and that is one, to cut eligibility for programs, so basically affect the eligibility levels, which the governor did not want to do. She wanted to maintain eligibility for Medicaid-related programs. And then the second way to affect it is to cut back on services, and we wanted to maintain core Medicaid-related services because that's for the most vulnerable people. And so the governor's goal was to make sure we could maintain Medicaid-related services for the most vulnerable population. And I do understand your point about OPI potentially saving money and keeping people off of Medicaid services. It's just, it was a choice, the hard choice that the governor had to make with respect to where to make recommended reductions. The other place was to basically place other choices we had were such as reducing the amount of hours people could have services within the Medicaid-related program, and that was not an arena in which the governor wanted to go.
Well, please, with all due respect, I think there's a lot more options than that. I think there's that you can find cost savings other than cutting such a valuable program. Also, do you have any problems with regards to the long-term promises that were made with regards to the Fairview Housing Trust to some of those vulnerable people in this state with disabilities, that now you're completely emptying that trust?
Co-Chair Rayfield, Representative Buehler, again, it was a choice of whether we reduced actual services to the people receiving IDD-related services, and this was a way to maintain services or not cut eligibility. And again, my understanding is, and I don't, and I will be very honest with you, I wasn't around when the actual Fairview, the Fairview was sold, but the statutory language has the ability to allow for the expenditure of these dollars on programs. There's going to have to, you'd have to change the statute a little bit. I understand completely your concern and other people's concerns. It was a choice that the governor made, and it's a recommendation. And obviously, the legislature has the final say on what is in and what is not in the budget. So that was a recommendation in order to preserve eligibility for programs.
And as a point of reference for the committee, just to kind of keep this as we're thinking about this, as we're developing the cuts list, the governor's budget represented basically a 14.7 increase from prior budget levels. We have been asked on this committee to manage to an 8%. And so the cuts that you're seeing here are only a fraction of what we will be seeing and what we will be doing. And there are a lot of, I mean, all of us have probably been taking meetings about the importance of absolutely everything in these budgets, right? And I think the other thing that we need to recognize is that this budget presents this committee with a set of false choices. We're investing into one thing, we are going to be cutting into another, and the opportunity cost of $1 in one program means that it's not in another. And there are a lot of rationales back and forth for why you might invest, say, for instance, like we were just talking about OPI, why you might invest into OPI. Some people might argue that you know, helps a higher income side where you might want to invest into Medicaid where you're getting match dollars. And so just kind of, I think as we approach these things, I think it's really good to kind of keep in mind that we're also being asked to do more than what the governor has done. The governor, with all due respect, did a wonderful job in investing into human services where the budget that we're potentially given is going to be much less than what we're trying to manage to right now. So, put a little perspective on the job that we have to do.
And Coach Rayfield, Representative Bueller, just want to acknowledge, I receive your point, understand your point. Yeah. These decisions were not easy to make. I will tell you, in my number of years working on budgets, this was probably the most difficult budget season I've ever been through. So these choices weren't made lightly. I just want to assure you of that. So if you want,
Representative Alonso Leon.
Yeah. And so I want to echo what Representative Bueller has mentioned. And I had folks, LPI folks, come and talk to me. And they shared their concern that every time we're in a budget crunch, they're up for removal or reduction. And that creates a lot of anxiety. Mm-hmm. So, and that's almost every session we need to reduce. And so I just want to acknowledge that. But I get that our job is going to be very hard as well, just as it was very hard for our governor to decide her recommendations. We're equally going to have a challenging time in deciding which programs to cut and which programs to keep.
Senator Winters.
Thank you. And I have been, and I was around for quite a while. But this budget cycle, and I think the only one I can compare to that's similar to this are was 2002 and 2003, and this is a tough budget cycle. And one of the reasons that when you look at how things are funded, OPI is the one that's totally general funded, not no match, and what have you. So that's. That tends to be an issue why they're put on when it starts reduction. I would agree with Coach Rayfield. This is probably, and with Ms. Brickman, this is probably one of the most difficult for all your subcommittees. When you start talking about you've got to reconcile 1.6 billion. I'm not talking million now. This body will have some difficult choices that must be made. It's not unlike the federal government, and I repeatedly tell this when I'm going to town halls and others. We do not have the ability to write and raise our debt ceiling. That is not how it works at the state level. At the state level, it means that we must, by Constitution, balance our budget, which means it has to mirror revenue. So with that said, it's going to be difficult choices this session for those who are listening out there, and it's not just this subcommittee. All the subcommittees are going through this same process.
Please continue.
Okay. And then just to provide you with a little bit of information with respect to where the governor made choices to actually make new investments. And, of course, most of them are child welfare related. There is a policy option package in the budget that would increase foster care provider rates. There's also a package that increases, or not doesn't, it, well, in it results in an increase in behavioral rehabilitation rates, but it's an update of the model to more accurately reflect what those providers need payment for. And then there's also a recommendation for funding for kind of on a block grant, so to speak, level, the Attorney General's Office for representation of child welfare workers in dependency proceedings within courts across the state. And then within the IDD program, there is a policy option package to increase rates for direct service providers. Those, again, are the individuals that work for companies that provide care. They're not your personal support workers that are represented by the unions. So these are the direct service provider rates, and it updates the model to address some compression issues and equality issues amongst the different types of providers. Within APD, there is a continuation of and completion of the Central Abuse Management Registry system that the department has been working on now for a couple of biennia. And then DHS-wide, the continuation of the Integrated Eligibility Project, which you've heard a bit about, and understand that the governor's budget now is contains a different number than what will probably be presented in front of this committee as they continue to work out and shake out the details of the design and costs of that system. And then also there was an investment in increasing background check, the staffing in the background check unit, in order to try and help facilitate getting facilities licensed more quickly, getting providers licensed more quickly, because they have at the time that I was doing the budget, if I remember correctly, they have about a six-month backlog on getting people and providers licensed. And so with that, that's my last slide, and I'm happy to answer any other questions if you have any, or just be quiet.
So, okay. Seeing no other questions, you can be quiet.
Okay. It's really hard to touch my mind.
I'll keep that between us. Dr. Richardson.
Thank you, co-chairs and members of the committee. For the record, again, I'm Reginald Richardson. I'm the deputy director of DHS, and I'm here on behalf of Clyde Psyche. I will ask Eric Moore, chief financial officer, if he'd join me at the table.
Good day.
So, what we wanted to do for today is to provide you with a summary of the presentations in which you've heard, and to emphasize some of the points that we want to leave you with as we conclude our presentations. The first slide describes the drivers of our caseloads for our five program areas and all of those that impact the work that we do. Next is the safety net. This is an important slide for the committee in that with the recovery of the economy in Oregon, it might be easy to overlook that those who continue to rely on assistance programs and services for stability, safety, and support. The impacts of investment and reductions are multiplied by people receiving more services than just one, bigger benefits or a bigger hit. Next series of slides are just additional information for each of our five program areas. If you remember, Ashley Carson Cottingham is the Director of Aging and People with Disabilities. APD is all about safety, independence, and choice for older adults and people with disabilities. 238,000 persons receive Older Americans Act services, which includes things such as Meals on Wheels, et cetera. APD also is responsible for the oversight of investigations of about 13,445 abuse, neglect, and financial exploitation investigations, 20,000 served in-home. In addition, responsible for the licensing of long-term beds and licensing oversight, nursing home, assisted living, residential care for about 38,000 beds. Our intellectual and developmental disability services, led by Lilia Tennedy, our IDD program supports independence, choice, and community engagement. They serve about 8,000 children and 18,000 adults, some of the most vulnerable people here in the state of Oregon. They also oversee the Employment First and Community Employment Initiatives. Our VR program, led by Trina Lee, our VR program helps people with disabilities achieve and maintain advances in and advance in employment. It's all about work and independence with strong connections to other workforce agencies and the Department of Veterans Affairs. We serve 21,000 participants in our independent living programs, 14,000 receiving basic VR services, another 4,225 for youth transition to college or work, and 755 in supported employment. In our self-sufficiency program, our anti-poverty programs, led by Kim Fritland, self-sufficiency programs are the most commonly identified safety net programs for families and the connections to work to help make ends meet. Annually, 1.2 million Oregonians receive some type of SSP supports. In our SNAP program, we serve 968,000 people per year. In our TANF program, 23,200 families per year. And in our employment-related daycare, we support 13,372 children of working families per year and another 1,000 cases of refugee assistance per year. Our child welfare program, led by Lena Al-Husseini. In our child welfare program, which is the most visible program of our agency, we're charged with keeping vulnerable children safe and services to families to help children return home. We had 37,000 child protective service investigations, and about 11,200 children spent at least one day in foster care. And we were able to adopt out 750 children. Operations, led by myself. Operations is the support services for programs and business functions of all programs that I just previously described. Support functions are the foundation of the house. If you remember, we showed you last week, and we'll show you again on Thursday, for our programs. The next slide captures our budget, which you've just heard a presentation on, so I won't mention that. I want to move to our guiding principles and talk a little bit about those guiding principles. When we look at investments or reductions, these are the principles we keep in mind. To maintain and preserve the first priorities, if reductions are taken, what is the impact to the program and to the related program and cost? And then finally, what I'll share with you is our mission and core values in action. What you see here, if you go ahead, Eric, you can advance it to the last one. What you see here is that we've taken our program areas and placed them in grids that show safety, health, independence, choice, employment, and stability to give you some flavor of the programs with the focus of our core values. We have in the room each of our program directors or their deputies, and so we'd be happy to take any questions that you have about the programs at DHS. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Please, Representative Buehler.
Yeah. So on one side of the overall slide, you said you had roughly 8,000 employees at DHS. Is that state employees or those are services that are contracted outside of DHS?
Those are our employees, state employees.
You can give me a rough idea where they're located around the state geographically.
For the 8,000 employees? I couldn't give you off the top of my head. We have a number of branches and offices around the state. If we can get back to you that information.
What percentage of those 8,000 could be contracted out?
I'm not prepared to answer that question right now, but again, we could do some research and get back.
Just to put some context around the 8,000, the majority of those, the protective service workers and your intake workers?
I'm sorry, Senator.
Are the majority of the 8,000 that you're referring to protective service workers or, and your kind of like intake or assessment eligibility workers?
So, as you know, our larger program, self-sufficiency, and other programs are the direct workers that provide support to the families that we work with. So, yes, thank you.
Other questions? Oh, please, Senator Gelzer.
Thanks. Dr. Richards, we've heard a couple of numbers recently that have been different. On the BRS beds, I know that there was a loss of beds, but I think that I heard that we now have a net gain of BRS beds. Could you clarify which is the case?
Sure. Co-chairs and Senator Gelser, let me confer with staff. Lori?
Good morning. For the record, my name is Lori Price. I'm Deputy Director of Child Welfare Programs. Both are true. We had a significant loss in capacity, specifically in our BRS bed last year, and it was at the very end of the year, November, December, that we brought on a significant chunk of new capacity. So we are now ahead a bit, but we're continuing to work on building capacity statewide so we have more choice, more opportunities to serve children.
Great, thank you. And just as a follow-up, so where we are right now, we've gone through a difficult time, but capacity is now building and we are above where we were when we started that loss.
Yes, Co-Chair Rayfield, Co-Chair Steiner-Hayward, members of the committee, absolutely correct. We are climbing and we are working feverishly to do that, yes.
And I know that's a lot of hard work on your part, so thank you very, very much for that.
Just to follow up on that, and just for the record, because the question was talked about contracting and what have you, those beds are contracted out. Is that correct?
Co-chairs, members of the committee, Senator Winters, that is absolutely correct. We do contract with private child caring agencies to provide that level of service for children in the child welfare system.
Thank you.
Certainly.
Okay. Seeing no other questions, Ms. Beiler, is there anything else we need to cover today?
No, except although it seems like this is sort of a wrap-up, we will still hear from the agency again on Thursday because there's no meeting tomorrow, but on Thursday both the Department of Human Services and Oregon Health Authority will be back to talk about the shared programs. So both entities have shared services that both agencies share. They'll be in to talk about both of those components on Thursday.
And good co-chair, did you have anything? It looked like you would.
No, sir.
All right. So with that, thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll go ahead and adjourn for today. Thank you.